हरि ओम चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 25. Adhyaya Prakashika. In this chapter, Bharat Maharaj's attainment of the body of a Brahman is described in this body he remained like one dull, deaf, and dumb. So much so that when he was brought before the goddess Kali to be killed as a sacrifice, he never protested but remained silent. After having given up the body of a deer, Bharat Maharaj took birth in the womb of the youngest wife of a Brahmana. In this life, he could also remember the activities of his past life. And in order to avoid the influence of society, he remained like a deaf and dumb person. He was very careful not to fall down again. He did not mix with anyone who was not a devotee. This process should be adopted by every devotee, as advised by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Asat Sangha Tyag A Vaishnava Achar. One should strictly avoid the company of non-devotees, even though they may be family members. When Bharat Maharaj was in the body of a Brahmana, the people in the neighborhood thought of him as a crazy, dull fellow. But within, he was always chanting and remembering Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although his father wanted to give him an education and purify him as a Brahmana by offering him the sacred thread, he remained in such a way that his father and mother could understand that he was crazy and not interested in the reformatory method. Nonetheless, he remained fully Krishna conscious, even without undergoing such official ceremonies. Due to his silence, some people who were no better than animals began to tease him in many ways, but he tolerated this. After the death of his father and mother, his stepmother and stepbrothers began to treat him very poorly. They would give him the most condemned food, but still he did not mind. He remained completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. He was ordered by his stepbrothers and mother to guard a paddy field one night, and at that time the leader of a dacoit party took him away and tried to kill him by offending him by offering him as a sacrifice before Bhadrakali. When the dacoits brought Bharat Maharaj before the goddess Kali and raised a chopper to kill him, the goddess Kali became immediately alarmed due to the mistreatment of a devotee. She came out of the deity and, taking the chopper in her own hands, killed all the dacoits there. Thus, a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can remain silent despite the mistreatment of non-devotees. Rogues and dacoits who misbehave towards a devotee are punished at last by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 11. The home life of Jarabharat. Verses 12 to 20. Dacoits kidnap Jarabharat in an attempt to please Goddess Kali. Verses 1 to 11. The home life of Jarabharat. After having given up the body of a deer, Bharat Maharaj took a birth in a Brahmin family. In this life, he could also remember the activities of a past life, and in order to avoid the influence of society, he remained like a deaf and dumb person, because he was very careful not to fall down again. Yes?
It seems like a little bit of a different approach than Arjuna.
Meaning
that Arjuna is asked to fight, even though...
Because that's his duty.
Yes, but he just...
But he's a Brahmin here, so he doesn't have to fight.
No, he doesn't have to fight, but there are Brahmana duties. Different tongue, I see. Doesn't exactly...
Yeah, no, that's there. But then we see is he's already on that Paramahamsa platform. So at that point, it's not really... Just like Bart Maharaj's brothers, some of them were Paramahamsas.
Yeah.
So some were Kshatriyas, some were Paramahamsas, some were Brahmins. So since he's functioning on the Paramahamsa platform, he doesn't actually have to perform those duties.
So then Arjuna is acting within the Majjhima platform. Yeah.
Yes, that's the whole point. Is he's basically, that's what we're saying, is here's the example of someone on the Madhya platform, how he becomes perfect and does everything for Krishna. And then we see with Jarabhart how someone on the Uttam platform becomes perfect and does everything for Krishna.
But in actuality, Arjuna is doing it for Leela.
Yes, because it's just like you see is... Like Prabhupada and the Acharyas will come, but they're Uttamadhikaris, but they play the position of a Madhya.
Yes, yes, yes.
But he's not doing that.
No.
He's just remaining on that platform. So if he takes up the duties, then he would be acting as a Madhyama. But he doesn't take it up, so he just remains as a Hamsa.
Is he also doing this as for Leela, or is it actually, this is just his life? This is just how it turned out?
On how it's presented, this is just his life.
This is how it went, yeah.
You know, but it's a story that's
pretty far out.
Worth hearing about.
Yeah.
No, the stories in the universe are quite amazing.
Yeah.
You know, because around here you don't have that amazing stories.
No.
You have something, unique people here and there that is quite special, but not like what you get in the Bhagavatam. So these are factual stories about factual people that actually happen. But because it's a story, the chronology is not according to the modern academics' taste.
Yeah.
They want it to be just history means it just starts from, you know, creation and goes right on through and that's it. But because it's a story, I mean, it's a discussion. Therefore, it moves in that personal way that sometimes it's talking this, sometimes that, goes back and forth. And because of that, that gets them bent out of shape because they can't tell when it is, where it is, you know, anything.
And this because we're dealing with levels of consciousness. That's the
that's the whole point. Just like in the evolution of the species, it's about consciousness. It's not about bodies. So in here, then again, the history is the evolution of the consciousness, right? Because so the other is evolution up to human. So now this is from human up to transcendence, right? Yeah. So that's the... Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, after giving up the body of a deer, Bharat Maharaj took a birth in a very pure Brahmana family. There was a Brahmana who belonged to the dynasty of Angira. He was fully qualified with Brahminical qualifications. He could control his mind and senses, and he had studied the Vedic literatures and other subsidiary literatures. He was expert in giving charity, and he was always satisfied, tolerant, very gentle, learned, and non-envious. He was self-realized and engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He remained always in trance. He had 9 equally qualified sons by his first wife, and by his second wife he begot twins, a brother and a sister, of which the male child was said to be the topmost devotee and foremost of saintly kings, Bharat Maharaj. This, then, is the story of the birth he took after giving up the body of a deer." Okay. Bharat Maharaj is a great devotee, but he did not attain success in one life. In Bhagavad Gita, it said that a devotee who does not fulfill his devotional duties in one life is given the chance to be born in a fully qualified Brahmin family, or a rich Kshatriya or Vaishya family. Suchi nam shri matam gehe, Bhagavad Gita 6:41. Bharat Maharaj was the firstborn son of Maharaj Rishabdev in a rich Kshatriya family, but due to his willful negligence of his spiritual duties and his excessive attachment to an insignificant deer, he was obliged to take birth as the son of a deer. However, due to his strong position as a devotee, he was gifted with the remembrance of his past life. Being repentant, he remained in a solitary forest and always thought of Krishna. Then he was given the chance to take birth in a very good Brahmin family. Yeah. So we see here is that this is the position. One continues. So he's in a very good Brahmin family, but also we see this family of devotees. Right? And advanced, very pure, very advanced, self-realized. So you're not going to get much better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes.
All in all, it is said that he fell down, but actually he was making progress all the time.
For the that's why Krishna in the Gita says even one performs something that's not correct, he's still considered saintly. Right? By atheistic morality, we can't digest that at all. By theistic morality, it's a tough one to swallow. So it's only actually when one's dealing with the platform of mukti and bhakti that one can actually understand how one can progress. Right? Because it's not the activity that makes you progress, it's the consciousness. So the idea is by the situation he's in, it makes him more Krishna conscious. But we can't say, oh, I can follow this path. You know, like that. You know, where can I buy a deer? You know, that's not the process.
Then you would have missed the point.
You would have missed the whole point. Yeah. So it's not these secondary things. It's that due to the secondary things, they're done in such a way by Krishna, right, in line with one's previous prarabdha karma, which doesn't exist anymore, right, except for the subtle and gross body. That one will be able to relate to it and actually see how to move forward. Right? Because if it was someone else's karma, it wouldn't bother you. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So then he's born in this Brahmin family. And being born in this Brahmin family, then now he has the opportunity to continue in Krishna consciousness. Because it means devotee family is the best, then next would be Brahmin, then next would be Kshatriyas or Vaishyas, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if it's going to be devotees, and they're and then the devotees, they could be of any of them. So of that, then devotees who are Brahmins, right? And then of that, who are practicing very nicely, very pure, like his family. So you could basically say this is one of the best births you could ever get. You know, it means if you ended up as a son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that might be a touch better. But, you know, this is
not bad.
Not bad, right?
And he's not having any of it. And he's not having any of it.
Having meaning?
He's
getting
not
involved.
He's
not. Yeah. So that's the position. Then we see is that there's the senior wife, the junior wife. Now with the senior wife, the father has nine sons. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be the prominent ones. The second wife, then they'll be the next, right? Okay. So then it also makes it very convenient for him that he doesn't have the duties. Like his Bharat Maharaj, he had the duties to take care of his brothers, run the kingdom and all this. So the natural thing is if he was born of the first wife, then it would be natural that would be his duty.
Yeah.
But being born of the second wife, he should take up duties, but it won't have the same responsibility.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? And we also see here is that it was very nicely arranged that there's twins, so that even though he's not really playing along so nicely, at least there's a sister there that his mom can take care of and be happy. Right? You know, so you can see Krishna's arranged it all very nicely. Right? Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Due to his being especially gifted with the Lord's mercy, Bharat Maharaj could remember the incidents of his past life. Although he received the body of a Brahmana, he was still very much afraid of his relatives and friends who were not devotees. He was always very cautious of such association because he feared that he would again fall down, right? Because he got involved with a cute and cuddly deer, and he fell down, let alone relatives, right?
So when he's taking birth in a non-devotee family, it's to make that choice easy for him? Or you'd say he was a devotee before, so he would take birth in a devotee family? Or did I miss something?
It means Jarabharat?
Yeah.
No, but he took birth in a Brahmin family.
Yeah, Brahmin family.
Who are devotees?
Yes.
Oh, so
but there's relatives.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It means the father, he has brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, grandparents, nieces, nephews, cousins, all that.
Yes.
Then the stepmother, she has the same thing, and then his own mother, she has the same thing.
Yes. Got it.
Right. So if you think it's a trip when there's one father and mother, now here's two mothers and one father. So that means it's one third bigger.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Got it.
Let alone if it's, how you say, they have more than that.
Yes.
Chitraketu had 10 million wives.
Yes.
You can imagine the relatives. They wouldn't even be able to truck in enough watermelons for that family reunion, right? So, yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. Okay, you understand that?
Got it.
So, okay, we got there. I thought you were talking about devotees, but talking about Jarabharata.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Duda is okay. Consequently, he manifested himself before the public eye as a madman, dull, blind, and deaf, so that others would not try to talk to him. Right. So it's the same kind of thing Shiva does. He just doesn't take it this far. But he just dresses in such a way that everybody leaves him alone, right? You know, who wants to hang out with this guy? Right? So anybody who's materialistic won't. But we always see that Narad Muni and Sanat and the four Kumaras, they're always sitting with him in that. And then his wife doesn't have a problem. So, you know, then what more do you need? Right? Like that. You know, his wife's a great devotee. And his brothers are all self-realizing great devotees. So then there's no problem. So that's good enough for him. Plus he's got his banyan tree, right? You know, Nandi's cool, so, you know, it's all good. Yeah. Okay. In this way, he saved himself from bad associations. Within, he was always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord and chanting the Lord's glories, which save one from the bondage of fruit of action. In this way, he saved himself from the onslaught of non-devotee associates. The Brahmana father's mind was always filled with affection for his son, Jarabharat, Bharat Maharaj. Therefore, he was always attached to Jarabharat. Because Jarabharat was unfit to enter the Grihastha ashram, he simply executed the purificatory process up to the end of the Brahmacharya ashram. Although Jarabharata was unwilling to accept his father's instructions, the Brahmana nonetheless instructed him in how to keep clean and how to wash, thinking that the son should be taught by the father. Right? So the father's performing his duties, even though the son doesn't really have the qualification. Because of his nature, then he's not fit for a Grihastha ashram. So then he only had all the, the samskars performed up to the Brahmacharya ashram, like that. Because that the father just does. So he has all these things, but past that. But even though he's not responding and all that, still the father, out of affection, it's his duty to do that, therefore he's teaching. Right? This is the advantage of the Vedic system, is that you have the combination of the duties, so everything's very clear, but you have the natural affection. Right, yes. So between the two of them, then everything is very stable and very comfortable.
Yes.
Mm. Is that right? Yes. Yes.
What are the concerns, the duties, the Brahmacharya ashrams, the process, Brahmacharya ashram? There is some ceremony.
That's the Upanayana.
Yes.
Like that. But it appears that he didn't necessarily do the Samvartana. Says up to the end, but it doesn't necessarily, I don't get the idea that he actually graduated, because he wasn't qualified to get married.
Yes.
Okay. You know, but in any case, he doesn't get married, so it didn't matter either way. Srila Prabhupada comments, Pratigya. In the body of a Brahmana, Maharaj Bharat was completely absorbed in devotional service within. Therefore, it was not at all necessary for him to execute the regulative principles of fruit of activity. Hetu, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Swanushtitasya dharmasya samsidhir haritoshanam. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13. One has to satisfy Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the perfection of the regulative principles of fruit of activity. Besides that, it is as it is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, duties, dharma, executed by men, regardless of occupation, are only so much useless labor. They do not provoke attraction for the message of the Supreme Lord. 1.2.8. Right. So the duties one performs, one's supposed to perform duties, but if by performing those, then one doesn't become Krishna conscious, it's a waste of time. Right. So like before, Bharat Maharaj was quoting dharmic rules on how you have to take care of someone who's surrendered, someone who, you know, doesn't have shelter, which are correct, but not at the expense of not being Krishna conscious.
Yes.
So that's where the mistake is.
Yes.
Right. So one's supposed to be engaged in the devotional activities, but being engaged in these activities, then that'll be expressed with the religious principles. But if you're only expressing the religious principles without the devotional service, it's a waste of time. Waste of time meaning human life's meant to go back to Godhead. It doesn't mean it's not a nicer waste of time than your neighbor. It just means that it's still a waste of time because it didn't fulfill actually the need of human life.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So this is important. So this is not, yeah, of course, and that, you know, this. No, this is the point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's how Jarabhart got in this condition, yes.
So how is he engaged in devotional service?
Who?
Jarabhart.
By always hearing and chanting the Lord's glories. Right? It says, within he was always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord and chanting the Lord's glories. Right? It just, he didn't, there was no external like that. So then accordingly, technically, yes. Like that. So this is how they're supposed
to
behave.
This is
right?
How it works.
Yeah. You didn't all catch that? Krishna West Coast.
It's not about the externals.
It's not about the externals, yes. Right? And in no shine of any emotional things. So Jarabhart is the acharya here. You know, just like Rishabhdev is the acharya for the Jains, so he's the acharya for this life. Yeah.
So they're all related.
Yeah, they're all related. Yeah. Okay, so we see here he's completely absorbed in devotional service, so it wasn't necessary to perform the ritualistic activities because he's so absorbed, right? And so therefore one who does absorb himself in Krishna consciousness, then there's technically no need of doing these other activities, right? But we see is he is only chanting Hare Krishna, he doesn't care for the rules, right? So this is what I chant Hare Krishna, I don't care for the rules, looks like.
Yes.
You know? In other words, on that platform, you would not be qualified for a grihastha ashram.
Yes.
So if anybody who's a grihastha says that statement, then they're misquoting the scriptures.
Yes.
Right? So where's it? Is that my phone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the idea here is that it's about serving Krishna that's the main thing. Now in the conditioned state, you have to engage your conditioning. He's not conditioned. He is liberated.
Mm-hmm.
So he does not have to engage his conditioned nature in the Lord's service. Mm-hmm. He just has to directly be absorbed in the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And the material energy will take care of it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And they're just like the child. It's just absorbed in what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So, but for those who are conditioned, then they engage that in the Lord's service, as we see before. It's about the example is given Arjuna. Why is it Arjuna's doing duties and Jarabhart's not? Because Arjuna is acting the position of a Madhyama.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's doing his duties, so let alone a neophyte.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then in that way, then the purificatory rites and these different things are very useful to bring one to a platform of purity, which devotional service goes very smoothly. But it's not that that makes devotional service.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Necessary but not sufficient.
Necessary but not sufficient. Yes, very good.
Necessary. It seems that Jaibarat really understood his mistake as attached to the deer.
Yes. That he worked out as a deer.
Yes.
So that's why now he's not going to make any more mistakes. So even as a deer, you see, he left home because he was from one mountain with the whole, you know, herd was there. He left that and went back to the Gandaki.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so in that position, then he was just absorbed in serving the Lord, remembering the Lord and all that.
Which means that he realized alone his situation.
Yes, well, that's the advantage of a Brahmin. Or of a devotee is that they can on their own understand it. That's why in the Shastra, when even you're dealing on the mundane platform, you don't have punishments for Brahmins.
Yes.
Because the Brahmin is smart enough to actually, if it's once the problem comes up, to realize what it is, or when it's explained, to realize what it is.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's then.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Okay. Upanayan, Udaharana. These karmakanda activities are required as long as one has not developed Krishna consciousness. If one is, so it means karmakanda. Means karmakanda will be regulating your activities for fruit of benefit. You want fruit of benefit, but you still have to regulate it. Does that make sense? Yes. If one has developed in Krishna consciousness, there's no need to execute the prior regulative principles of karmakanda. Right? So the karmakanda is for getting the material benefits. So if one's a devotee, one doesn't have to follow karmakanda.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that there aren't regulative duties that one practices according to your position, but they're no longer done for fruit of gain. And if something specifically for fruit of gain, those are given up. So just those which are your nitya naimittic kriyas that must be performed, that are, you know, the recommended, those are done.
Yes.
Right. So this is, in the discussion here, this is where these fine points, one has to be able to understand the various definitions and to be able to work with the one that's being described at the time.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because karmakanda specifically means fruitive work.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be taking any activity, but if it's for your own benefit, right, fruitive, mm-hmm. then it's called karmakanda.
Yes.
Right, and if the activities that would be termed as karmakanda are used for Krishna, they're devotional service, like Prithu Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Or, and who is that? Rishabhdev was doing the yajnas and all those things. Or no, Bharat Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that Prithu Maharaj and Bharat Maharaj were performing all the duties that would be expected of the kings and all that, though they may be, found within the karmakanda sections of the Vedas, but they were seeing it all in relation to the Lord.
Yes.
So it's technically not karmakanda, there's devotional service.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But because people are interested in fruitive activity, those activities that are specifically aimed at that, those are put in the karmakanda section.
Yes.
Right? Activities that everybody should be performing, that's your nitya no nitya kriyas. Right? Your daily and seasonal and occasional activities. Right? So even though you may be following them for fruitive purpose, for liberation, for bhakti, right? Then those activities that would be specifically attractive to the karmakandi, that's in that section.
Yeah.
Though a devotee, if that's part of the duties he would be performing, naturally performing, then he can do them and it's still devotional service.
Yes.
But it's according to scripture, it's regulated, and all those things.
Yes.
Right. So, in here, because we're dealing with Jarabharat, that means one can say, no, but why is he doing this? Why isn't he doing his duties? But we're showing, no, if he's Krishna conscious, he doesn't have to do actually any, follow any of the rules.
Yes.
Right? Because the rules are only a medium to engage in Krishna's service. So he's following the rule by always remembering, never forgetting. So even if externally he doesn't follow anything, it'll still work. Right? And then we drop back. So if that will work, then let alone we perform duties and remembering Krishna, that'll also work.
So it's just a matter of how much secondary do you need to
use. Yes, how much secondary you need to use, and that depends upon how much primary is there. In other words, it has to be 100%.
Yes.
Like that. So Jarabharat is 100% primary,
yes,
and zero secondary. Yes.
For an inexperienced person, it would be impossible to tell someone who is like that advanced or for someone who is just neglectful of their duties. It would be impossible to tell.
Basically, yes. He's on this platform, yes. If the person is a dependent, then you try to teach like his father. But if he's not a dependent, then there's no advantage to saying anything. Right? So unless you can adjust it, you can do it, then don't get involved. Is that some sense? Srila Madhavendra Puri said, "Oh, regulative principles of karmakanda, please excuse me. I cannot follow all these regulative principles, for I am fully engaged in devotional service." He expressed the desire to sit somewhere beneath a tree and continue chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Consequently, he did not execute all the regulative principles. Similarly, Haridas Thakur was born in a Mohammedan family. From the very beginning of his life, he was never trained in the Karmakanda system. But because he was always chanting the holy name of the Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would accept him as the Namacharya. The authority in chanting the holy name. Right. So here we have the examples, and then we see how it's being synthesized into that that the devotional service is the main thing. You know, that's what we've established before. They don't have to follow. So this is the whole point here. That doesn't mean you don't follow the regular principles given in the Veda, and you follow regular principles of some Lechas and Yavanas. That's not what we're talking about here. It means you give up rules, it means you give up rules. Right? And you don't give up rules, then you'd follow the Veda. That's all. You know, and then there's always the lokika, you know, the local customs, like, you know, crossing the street at the, you know, zebra crossing, and, you know, when the light's green, and those kind of things. That you do, right? Siddhanta, as Jarabharat, Bharat Maharaj was always engaged in devotional service within his mind. Since he had executed the regulative principles continuously for three lives, he was not interested in continuing to execute them, although his Brahmana father wanted him to do so. Right? So he wasn't interested anymore because he's already done all that. This is the ultimate been there, done that.
Got the t-shirt.
Yes.
Smoked the cigar.
Been there, done that.
Been there, done that. Yeah. That would be a good t-shirt.
Yeah. Been there, done that.
Yeah, you have jar of violet. Been there. That would be good.
Next Gorpani.
Yeah, next Gorpani. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Jarabharat behaved before his father like a fool, despite his father's adequately instructing him in Vedic knowledge. He behaved in that way so that his father would know that he was unfit for instruction and would abandon the attempt to instruct him further, right? Because he doesn't want to do all these things. Because once you're instructed in these things, then technically you're supposed to do them. He technically doesn't have to do them because of being on the Hamsa platform. But at the same time, as you know, why should his father go through and waste his time trying to do that and become more and more frustrated?
Yes. Right? So his father did not recognize his altered position.
No. He's covering it very well.
Yes, he's sneaky.
He would behave in a completely opposite way. Although instructed to wash his hands after evacuating, he would wash them before. Nonetheless, his father wanted to give him Vedic instructions during the spring and summer. He tried to teach him the Gayatri Mantra along with Omkara and Vyahriti. But after 4 months, his father was still not successful in instructing him. Yes. Burbu Maswa. The Brahmana father of Jarabharat considered his son his heart and soul, and therefore he was very much attached to him. He thought it wise to educate his son properly, and being absorbed in this unsuccessful endeavor, he tried to teach his son the rules and regulations of Brahmacharya, including the execution of the Vedic vows, cleanliness, study of the Vedas, the regulative methods, service to the spiritual master, and the method of offering a fire sacrifice. Right, so we see here, you know, the Vedic vows means you have your duties, and so you execute duties. You have that proper dutifulness and that proper, how you say? Yes, proper duty. Then cleanliness is there, study of the Vedas, so then you have knowledge and all that. Then regulative methods, then what is your lifestyle that goes along with it. So that would be that, your dress, everything that matches that. Then service to the spiritual master, so there's authority. Because there's a spiritual master, then there's the parampara, there's the supreme lord. Method of offering fire sacrifice, therefore the menial service. Right? Does that make sense? So it's all part of menial service. You know, we may take it into a prestigious position, but actually it's part of menial service.
It is same like Gurukul.
Yes, that's the point. This is means, in other words, the Gurukul training is the same. It's these principles.
Yes,
that's what makes Gurukul. One is trained in that, then one is able to go on nicely through Grihastha Ashram, Vanaprastha Sannyas. Right? The same principles.
Yes.
He tried his best to teach his son in this way, but all his endeavors failed. In his heart, he hoped that his son would be a learned scholar, but all his attempts were unsuccessful. Like everyone, this Brahmana was attached to his home, and he had forgotten that someday he would die. Death, however, was not forgetful.
What are you going to do?
Is there something I forget? Oh,
that's it.
all the yell is. At the proper time, death appeared and took him away. Right? So he had become forgetful. So we see a similar kind of situation, right?
Yes.
That you have a father who's very careful and very caring for the son, even though he can't be trained in so many ways.
Yes.
Right? Because, you know, so therefore Jarabhart and the deer.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, and even though he's forgotten about, you know, the death didn't forget about him. Right? You know. So a similar kind of situation. But we see is that Jarabhart is very careful not to get entangled again.
So maybe his father will take birth as a retard.
But he's a Paramahamsa, so that's the thing. See, if the deer had been a Paramahamsa,
the father's
that's
not
thing.
Talking. He's not thinking about a Paramahamsa. He's thinking about a retard.
But still, thinking if at the time of death one thinks of the spiritual master of that, even though it's not Krishna, you still go back to God.
Mm. Mm. Okay.
So then if he was attached to his son, the thought of his son, then he would get benefit because he is a great devotee.
That's an interesting point.
Another advantage to having sons that are advanced in Krishna consciousness, then the time of death, since you're attached to them anyway, then you go back to Godhead. Right?
So then,
but if not, you're a materialist, they become a materialist, you think of them, then you become another materialist.
So then seven generations.
Seven generations of materialism, yes.
Yes. And if you get a devotee child, then that child can
purify. Yes, then it purifies both.
Even though you may not know what's going on.
Yes. It's like that, I think when Prabhupada went the first time, that I know of the first time for preaching in Mexico City.
Okay.
Did a nice program and everything like that, and devotees very much appreciated and all that. Because it also tends to be a bit more a personal kind of culture.
Yes.
And so then, I think one lady, they were talking about the principle of remembering Krishna going back to Godhead. Mm-hmm. And then the lady asked, "Well, you know, is it all right if we remember you? Because we don't know Krishna, we know you."
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, "Yes, that'll work also." So that's the main thing. Srila Prabhupada comments, "These two attached to family life, those two attached to family life, who forget that death comes in the future to take them away, become attached and unable to finish their duty as human beings," right? Because they're thinking, I'm not able to finish my duty, taking care of the family, setting everything up. But that's just what you do in the meantime.
Yes.
The real duty is to think of Krishna and go back to Godhead. So doing that, even if the material duties are unfinished, they're technically finished.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's just like, let us say you're waiting for something to happen. You know, something you're supposed to do, so you're sitting there. So how long do you sit there and twiddle your thumbs or surf on the internet? Or
that could be days.
No, but I'm just saying, when does that end?
When the thing happens.
When the thing happens, right? In other words, you're sitting there waiting for an appointment. When the appointment comes, then do you say, no, I won't take the appointment, I'll continue surfing it?
Depending on the appointment.
Yes, but then if you do that, then what happens to that appointment? Yeah, and so therefore, do you get the benefits?
Mm-hmm.
No. So therefore, if you absorb yourself in the material activities of duties and forget about Krishna,
mm-hmm.
then that's the point. You'll just end up doing that.
And,
Technically, monkeys could surf the internet with their toes. You know, they could... You know what I'm saying? You know how sometimes you want to work on two things at once, you know? They could do that. They could be holding the iPad with their feet because they have prehensile toes, right? And then with their hand they could be working on the phone.
They're advanced.
Yeah.
Maybe with evolution.
Yeah, while eating with the other hand, right?
Maybe evolution will be kind to us.
Oh, with the tail, yeah, even that. Yeah.
Evolution might be kind to us and in future generations we'll be able to do the same.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. The duty of human life is to solve all the problems of life, but instead people remain attached to family affairs and duties, right? So all the problems means birth, death, old age, and disease. These are the problems. Not technically mortgage and taxes, though. They're part of death.
I'm thinking which part is that?
When one is fully interested in the service of the Lord, he does not need to follow all the regular principles enunciated in the Vedas. Of course, for an ordinary man, the Vedic principles are imperative. Right? So then you have to define how, you know, where you are. So if I'm a great guy, then okay, but then that doesn't fit into devotional service. That's why you see the devotees follow the standard rules. So in here, all the Veda principles enunciated in the Vedas, we follow the ones that the acharyas recommend. So when it says give up the rules, it means give up the rules that are outside what the acharyas recommended. Right? Those don't need to be followed. But if we use that principle to apply it to the acharyas' instructions, then we've missed the whole point. Right? Then we don't understand what's going on. Because what they've done is gone through all the Vedas and given the essence. So the Goswamis already did that. Then the commentaries, you know, on their works, and then preaching that to us, delivering it that to us, then gives us specific details how to apply that. Now if we throw those out, then what's our position? Because if you're not accepting what Prabhupada said, then you're not accepting what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, nor the previous acharyas up to Rupa Goswami. And if you're not accepting the instructions of Rupa Goswami, where does that place you? Definitely not in the spiritual world. So then, where do you end up?
That's the question.
Huh? Yes.
What is the answer?
What is the answer?
Where do they go?
They'll go somewhere wherever is important to them.
Okay, yes.
You know, so if the Western environment's important, they'll be up here again in the Western environment. If they're attached to their, you know, the Indian status, they'll be there. If they're attached to their ABCD status, they'll be born there.
How about reactions for bringing people away from Krishna consciousness?
It's 100 times more than it would be if you were doing it yourself.
It may even be...
No, it'll be more. But it just means it's more serious.
Yeah, exactly.
But the point is that 100's not arbitrary. That's just what Mana says.
Yeah.
It's technically 100 times worse. That's why Prabhupada says philosophical deviation is worse than sensual deviation. We take it sensual is the worst because on the platform of Pranamoy, then it's the worst. In other words, they were caught. Right, because in Pranamoy, everybody's about the senses, but you're trying to make it look like it's about everybody. You know, so that's why then. Yes.
I had recently discussion on this, when devotee, he was saying, yes, I believe in Bhagavatam and Prabhupada says, but this is not the reality, he said.
It's not the reality. And so what is the reality? Desperate housewife. You know, what's the reality? Did he explain?
I didn't ask them. I was just pressing the point that it is reality.
Yeah, but otherwise when they do that and say, you just say, so then what is reality?
I was just wondering, like, what is his level? Is he below Shraddha or what is his level?
It's not a strong position.
Yeah, this is what I said. This is not
it's not a strong position because if you don't accept what Prabhupada's saying there and this is not reality, then how are you actually engaged in Vajra Kriya? How you're taking advantage of Sadhu Sangha. So basically they'd be on a very low level of neophyte.
What I understood that his mind is filled with those mistakes devotees did.
Yes, and then what about his mistakes? How many cows in one McDonald's double cheese Mac burger, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
One cow, you know, each hair on its body. You're talking about millions of lifetimes. So, you know, we want to get down to brass tacks here. So, you know, who's the bad guys?
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole thing. You want to find faults, that's easy. See, the thing is finding faults, we generally take it as an elevated position. Because if I find a fault, basically the taste in it is I therefore establish myself as better. That's the taste, right? And so, therefore, how is that important?
Or how is the dual
right? Means, in other words, let us take, for example, if all the critical people on the planet were suddenly, loaded on, some kind of transport and sent to Pleiades, would anybody feel a loss? Right?
It would be beneficial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole point is, but somehow or another, the self, what do you call it?
Self-professed.
Yes, self-professed, generalissimos of how you say, kukinati, are think themselves very advanced. But the point is it's not necessarily a very exact science.
Yes.
Because as we see, when Krishna was present, people would find fault in him.
Yes.
Like that. The air is better back there, or?
Yeah, it's less smoke.
Less smoke.
Less smoke.
Yeah. Is that make sense? So that's the difficulty is that it's thought that it's an advanced position when actually it's a lower position. See, as if you can do something of benefit, then that's there. But if you only find faults, and because those faults, I won't get involved. Okay, why don't we get a newspaper? Or get Time or Newsweek magazine, or that kind of news magazines. Are there any faults?
Just faults.
Just faults. So, and all those faults are about people involved in which culture? The Vedic or the non-Vedic? Right, and you take something, some of these international magazines, they're finding fault with everybody all over the planet, right? The Far East, then the prime ministers, they've been caught for the, how many times? At least five or six guys have gone down in the last, 15 years or something, with somebody doing something stupid, like that. And then there's always things going on, and in Oceania, then there's, things in the Middle East, Africa, that's always, something unique and interesting. Then Europe, constantly stuff going on. America, like that. You don't hear as much about South America unless it gets really out of hand. So it's like, where is this ideal place, So far they haven't come up with some big expose on the Inuits, so maybe that's the only place that, they should consider that. And so far also, except for, being overly, wasting time too much dancing, then the penguins are definitely doing pretty good, right? And so therefore, you could consider moving to one of the two poles, and then there you could find perfection, because there no one's doing anything wrong, right? So that's the point, is that if it's because they found a fault, they can't practice Krishna consciousness. There's unlimited, it's like they can come up with the same faults that the same guys that say faults are all saying the same thing. So that means if we really got into it and wrote them all down and really, really went for it, we'd be talking about the same things and how many pages we would take up. Right? So that means that most of it you'd find would be very petty. It wouldn't even make it into the newspapers and magazines because it's so small and nobody cares. Yeah. He took my samosa. like that. It's not gonna hit front pages, what do you call it? 50-point type samosa stolen. It's not going down. So major things than that, they'd be how many headlines? And then that's it. And how long ago were those headlines? Does anybody care about the headlines from the 80s? Does anybody care?
Not even from last month.
No. So therefore, and they're still holding on to these, so then, wake up. Life moves on. Right? Even the karmis would think there's something wrong with you if you're still stuck in the past like that.
Yeah.
So, and today it's news of fresh disasters is going on every day. So therefore, he shouldn't take part in the modern culture either. So okay, we've thrown out the Vedic, we've thrown out the modern. So then his only option is Brahman. So he can sit down and just meditate on Brahman. And even that we can find fault in Maya bodies. So he'd have to stick to the Brahma bodies. So. So otherwise, when they say this, if it's worthwhile, ask what is, you know, for definitions. And if they don't see it's worthwhile, then just, you know, nod your head, make your points, and then suddenly have, you know, a very urgent something else to do. Yes.
Well, back to Bharat Maharaj and the deer. It reminded me of this one brahmacharya we know preaching in the West, and whenever there's any kind of like unmarried girls who come to the temple, he's very, you know, nice and compassionate and cultivating them and preaching to them. And of course he gets criticized, you know, for all the photos on Facebook and whatnot, but in his defense he says, no, real brahmacharya means to be indifferent, preach to the soul.
Okay.
And according to this pastime, you could even justify it by saying that provided it doesn't interfere with his sadhana or with his, you know, practice of devotion, then what's the harm? What's the problem?
No, there wouldn't be. The main point is to see how is his sadhana and everything doing, how is his service attitude, how does he deal with the devotees, how is his sense of attachment. So by those symptoms, you can tell, is he being affected or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if you see that he's not, then don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may not be for everybody,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you can do, because the point is then if you deal, so we're supposed to deal not nicely with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then the problem comes is, oh, the men don't deal nicely, and then you have the whole feminist movement. Then if you deal nicely, oh, they can't do that either. So what are you supposed to do? You can't be nice, you can't not be nice.
Yeah, you wait for the deer to grow up and then send them with the rest of the herd.
That's the whole point, is that you deal nice until they get situated, and at some point the girls will get, you know, married or situated nicely in a service somewhere, and then you move on. That's the point, is if so many girls have moved on and there's not a problem, is he still keeping contact with them and this and that, or is it just they've moved on and it's done? Right, you know, does that make sense? So then you can tell, these are symptoms you can tell. Because otherwise it's unfair to say we have to preach in these modern environments, and then modern environments, technically speaking, I think is over 50% women, so therefore then do we not talk to them? And so if that's fact, that's easy. That's the simple part. You know? But if you're going to talk, then you have to deal nicely. There's etiquette. It's like he says, brahmacharya means indifference. There means he doesn't need to deal with women. So if women are there, he deals. If they're not there, he's not looking for it. Now, if there was opportunity to do other services and all that, but he doesn't do that and just goes over and hangs out with the women, then you can say, okay, well, something's wrong here. But if who walks in the door happens to be men, he deals nicely. If they walk in the door, they're women, he deals nicely. Then what's the point? So is the problem that he's preaching, or is the problem that there's Facebook? And the people that are complaining, why are they looking, how do they know anyway? Because they're probably not his pictures, they're their pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the people that are complaining looking at those girls' Facebook page in the first place? So who's weird here? You know. Is that something?
Yeah.
You know, so then is it really a concern about the girls' welfare? Is it a concern that, you know, how come they can't talk to the girls? Or, you know, what's the real concern? We can't say, you know, we can't deal with women, and then we have women temple presidents and ZBCs and, you know, all that, you know, half, like that. I know myself, half my authorities are women, so... You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is then where how is this consistent? You know, they don't want you to deal with women, then keep the women out of the whole scene. If the women are part of the scene, then you have to deal with them. Unless finding fault is actually the purpose, and then you take these things, you can find more fault, then you can say it's a success. You know? But at the same time, one has to be very careful. That being said, but it's not that the grihastha dealing with all the women is not the same possibility of problem. In one sense, you have the point that the grihastha thinks it's his right to talk to the ladies, and so therefore he'll be less careful. Well, the brahmachari is not technically supposed to be so involved, so he'll be more careful. Right?
Yes.
that would be actually the brahmacharya will probably be able to function in that environment easier. Plus, you have the thing is that they're being brahmacharis, the ladies are supposed to basically leave them alone. So there's that, but the grihastha, then they can be relaxed and all that. You understand? So probably if you really, really check and get down to the wire, you'll probably find more affairs and that going on amongst the grihastha community than the brahmacharis with the girls.
Yes.
There's a good chance. We're not saying a lot's going on, but we're just saying there's probably more of that going on than the other, simply because the access is so easy. The guy is sitting with the girl, the grihastha, you can talk all day, no one will say anything. Right? But the brahmachari happens to be in the open room with them that you can walk into it. Oh, I found them alone. What do you mean? You walked in, it's an open room. No, they were alone. You know, it's just a, what do you call it? You know, it's tabloids, yellow journalism. You know. So, but you do have another one is the weakness, is that the brahmachari then most of the time is seen as open season, you know, while the grihastha is not seen in that way, right? But at the same time, the grihastha is already involved in that, so then, you know, if he's not happy in his family life and all that, then it is a possibility. You know what I'm saying? So each one has his strength, weakness, and all that. So, but the point is whatever the case, one must be careful. Right? Because now if we say there's sadhus living out in the forest, and they happen to have some animals hanging around the ashram, are we going to, you know, do the red flags go up and bells start ringing? And no. Right? No, I think there's, I forget where it is. Maybe it's in Thailand or, I don't remember if it's Thailand or Burma or where it is, but there's one Buddhist ashram. And everybody who has, you know, a pet they can't take care of or an animal that, you know, somehow or another stray is not supposed to be around, they take it down to that Buddhist ashram. And then the Buddha says, just take care of them. They're all part of the scene. So you walk in, walk around, and there's all these animals there. You know, and you name it, it's there. They even had a tiger, I think. Yeah. You know, a tiger, I think, got injured, and so then someone brought it, and they took care of it. So it lives there also.
The only animal left.
Definitely sorts things out. That's good. Yeah. So it's just like, you know, but we'll say, okay, well, it's cool. It kind of fits. Yeah. You know, but if it was some, you know, that the old lady down on the corner, you know, with all the cats, and that was how it was. She also had a horse and a cow and a donkey and a goat out in the backyard and a tiger. Then, you know, then you'd be thinking, right? So therefore, it's still a problem. So let alone others. You know, does that make sense? So you just have to see the symptoms. If it's working, okay. And if it's not working, then no. Because the point is they'll make a stink about brahmacharis, but if a grihastha has a problem, we won't make a stink about the grihasthas. You know? Like that. Though Manu does. When Manu describes adultery, it only describes it in connection with grihasthas.
That's adultery.
Huh?
That's actually adultery.
Adultery.
Yes, because brahmacharya is...
Yeah, because he's that would be kid tree. Right? He's actually a kid.
Kitri.
Huh?
Kitri.
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 Kitri. Oh, okay. So that's the thing. If you want to get into it, it gets very complicated. So that's the advantage of following the system, because if the system's there, then everyone deals nicely, then you could do, but then that it has to be, it's quite a wide range. So in other words, the brahmachari shouldn't be dealing, the grihastha should be dealing. But the grihasthas can't deal, that means the women should be dealing. As we discussed yesterday, the wife doesn't want the husband dealing with all the nice young girls, so therefore she should do it herself. Otherwise, then what happens is that the men can't do it, so that leaves it to the brahmacharis. Like that. Yeah.
So Maharaj, can we say that in this ashram situation, the main thing is to be careful for every ashram?
Yes, for every ashram has to be careful because there's attachment in every ashram.
And also to always have the right intent.
Yes.
Because sometimes it's difficult to maintain the intent.
That's what the practice is. All the sadhana and all the rules and regulations is to improve the quality of our intent and the stableness of our intent. You know, so we're always trying to increase that we're coming towards pure devotional service at the same time that we're stable in that. Because otherwise, every devotee means that they're a devotee and they have faith that every at some moment they're thinking that they just want to fully surrender and be serve Krishna and all that. But then there'll be other moments where they're not necessarily thinking like that. So the idea is to get that where that becomes the stable position. So we see here with Jarabharat, that's the stable position. We don't hear that sometimes he thinks like this, or that we hear that this is how he thinks. Okay. Of course, for an ordinary man, the Vedic principles are imperative. No one can avoid them. But when one has attained the perfection of devotional service, it is not very important to follow the Vedic principles, right? So the perfection of devotional service, what's the perfection of devotional service?
Prema,
but at least always remembering Krishna, not forgetting. Right? So then, if you've attained the platform of bhava, or the Uttama platform, the liberated platform, following the rules is not very important. So if they're acting, preaching, they'll follow them. And if they're not, then like Jarabharat, they don't have to follow, there's no fault.
But then again, Bharat Maharaj was on bhava.
Yes.
And he didn't follow.
But the point is he wasn't practicing his devotional service, he was involved in attachment. So then if you're going to deal with attachment, then you have to follow the rules for attachment. Right? Yeah. So now as a grihastha who's attached to his family, so he's supposed to do deity worship. Right?
Yes.
But was he doing his worship? Right? Is a grihastha supposed to be thinking of his wife and kids while he's doing the worship?
No.
No, but he was. So he wasn't even following the rules for attachment. So that's the problem, is that he wasn't functioning on the Uttam platform, therefore it was a problem.
So he said he was representing the Uttama platform, isn't it?
Means he's one that from the Uttama platform may fall to a lower position and then go back, just like Arjuna's on the mud, then goes down and then comes back.
Ajamil.
Right, because what's Arjuna, what's his relationship with Krishna?
Pretty good. Friendship.
Pretty good. Yeah. Okay, friendship. And then in the nine processes of devotion, where is friendship? Not a trick question.
Middle.
The middle, yes.
Middle.
Of?
The nine.
But within the nine? Because it's, yes, in the middle, but of dasyam shakyam atmani vedanam, right?
Yes.
So dasyam is generally considered in a generic sense to be the neophyte, shakyam to be the madhyama, and atmani vedanam to be the uttama. Right?
Yes.
So that's the natural position that he's taking.
Yes.
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 So we take it, friendship means you're doing what Krishna wants. That means, so for us in Lord Chaitanya's mission, we're preaching.
Mm-hmm.
For Arjuna, he's taking part in the Lord's pastimes and just serving the Lord. So it's all about what will please the Lord. Right? So,
yes.
Okay. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, thereafter, the Brahmana's younger wife, after entrusting her twin children, the boy and the girl, to the elder wife, departed for Patiloka, voluntarily dying with her husband. After the father died, the nine stepbrothers of Jarabharat, who considered Jarabharat dull and brainless, abandoned the father's attempt to give Jarabharat a complete education. The stepbrothers of Jarabharat were learned in the three Vedas, the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, and Yajur Veda, which very much encouraged fruitive activity, right? So being Trivedis, then they're very advanced in the process. Right? So they're not an ordinary kind of Brahmins. Even amongst Brahmins, that would be considered very elevated, right? But they encouraged the fruitive activity, so we see they were engaged in that way. The nine brothers were not at all spiritually enlightened in devotional service to the Lord. Their father had been, but they're not. Consequently, they could not understand the highly exalted position of Jarabharat. Degraded men are actually no better than animals. The only difference is that animals have four legs and such men have only two. Right? These two-legged animalistic men used to call Jarabharat mad, dull, deaf, and dumb. They mistreated him, and Jarabharat behaved for them like a madman who is deaf, blind, and dull. He did not protest or try to convince them that he was not so. Right? So, you know, someone would go with the husband, since he had two wives, then you have the elder sons who are going to take care and all that, so then that wife also has someone to take care of her. The younger wife, then she has Jarabharat, who's not going to take care, and the daughter who will get married and go away. So then of the two, then the elder wife has the better situation in this case. Right? So then it was just worked out who can go. But otherwise it's the position of the elder to that she has first right. Right? Like we see with Kunti and Madri. Like that. But then you work out which is going to be best for the situation. Is that? He did not protest or try to convince them that he was not so. When they called him, you know, dull and dumb and that, he didn't try to prove that he wasn't.
Right? Defeat the purpose.
If others wanted him to do something, he acted according to their desires. Whatever food he could acquire by begging or by wages, and whatever came of its own accord, be it a small quantity, palatable, stale, or tasteless, he would accept and eat. Because it was just whatever was arranged. So he's living by Amrita. So this is what Amrita means, right? Just whatever comes on its own. So it's not a recommended platform because most people wouldn't be able to function at that. Right? He never ate anything for sense gratification because he was already liberated from the bodily conception, which induces one to accept palatable or unpalatable food. Right? The bodily conception, then you'll say, this is good, this is not good. Right? He was full in the transcendental consciousness of devotional service, and therefore he was unaffected by the dualities arising from the bodily conception. Actually, his body was as strong as a bull's, and his limbs were very muscular. He didn't care for winter or summer, wind or rain, and he never covered his body at any time. He lay on the ground and never smeared oil on his body or took a bath. Because his body was dirty, his spiritual effulgence and knowledge were covered. Just as the splendor of a valuable gem is covered by dirt. He only wore a dirty loincloth and his sacred thread, which was blackish. So he got the reformatory rite, but he never performed the duties. He just had a copan and a Brahmin thread. That was about it. But he didn't bother him summer, winter, like that. That's how he's dressed. He slept on the ground.
He is like a Vaduta.
Yes. Right. Yeah, that's the point. He lay on the ground. Yeah, it doesn't say floor. Floor means you put a mat.
Yes.
Like this. Yes. You're sitting on the floor.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, but when it says sitting on the ground, yes, that means no mat.
Yes.
So that's the difference.
Yes.
Like in Chaturmasya, there's one vrata is you don't sleep on a bed, you sleep on the floor. That means you don't use the bed, you just use the mattress and that and sleep on the floor because it's simpler. Right? Then there's sleeping on the ground, which means you sleep directly on the ground, no mattress. So, okay. Understanding that he was born in a Brahmin family, people would call him a Brahma Bandhu and other names. Being thus insulted and neglected by materialistic people, he wandered here and there. Right? Because he has a thread, but he's just crazy, so then nobody bothers him. So in other words, the principle, if the crazy guy's not bothering you, don't bother him, because you don't know who he is.
Yes.
Right. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Deha Smriti Nahi Jar Samsara Bandha Kaha Kaha Har. one who has no desire to maintain the body, or who is not anxious to keep the body in order, and who is satisfied in any condition, must be either mad or liberated. Actually, Bharat Maharaj in his birth as Jara Bharat was completely liberated from material duties.
Dualities,
yeah. He was a Paramahamsa and therefore did not care for bodily comfort. So he's not functioning on that platform. So therefore, he's either crazy or he's a Paramahamsa. So we know he's a Paramahamsa. Everyone else thought he was crazy. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, the devotee only takes care when it needs to be taken care, you know, in connection to devotional service. Like you see, Prabhupada would dress very carefully and nicely, you know, when he was out preaching. And if it was a very special situation, he'd dress even more nicely. Mm-hmm. But when he was back in Vrindavan, he would just wear a yogi pata and that's it. Yeah. He wouldn't even wear a lungi, he'd just wear the yogi pata. Is that what it says? You know, so he wouldn't care about these things. Right? You know, Vrindavan is there, it's hot, it's this and that and everything. But while he was other places, then, you know, how to cool things down, how to make it nice and all that, because then the devotees had some engagement to do, some interaction, some service for the spiritual master. But would he go back to Radha Damodar, then he would just go back to his normal, you know, sadhu lifestyle. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, the maintenance and all that was for preaching. Otherwise, then he didn't get involved. So, Sukadeva Goswami continued, Jara Bharat used to work only for food. His stepbrothers took advantage of this and engaged him in agricultural field work in exchange for some food. But actually, he did not know how to work very well in the field. He did not know where to spread dirt or where to make the ground level or uneven. His brothers used to give him broken rice, oil cakes, the chaff of rice, worm-eaten grains, and burnt grains that had stuck to the pot. But he gladly accepted all this as if it were nectar. Right? So even though he's just working for grains, they don't have to take care of him any other way. They still, due to the materialistic mentality, then deal badly. Right? The point is that everybody else in the family needs nice clothes, nice facilities, nice this, nice that. Fancy food, he's just simple, whatever is that. So you take care nicely. Right? It's simple, but just nicely. But then they can't do that. They have to, what? It's just, I can get away with this.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? Yes. So that's the materialistic mentality. Yes.
Even they were so educated and Brahmanas, still they were lacking compassion or something.
That's because they're fruited.
Yes.
Like that. So that's why only the devotee actually has good qualities. Not that they can't manifest good qualities in a situation that they appreciate. But the point is, this devotee manifests good qualities in situations that aren't good.
Yeah.
That's how you tell the difference.
Not calculating.
Yes. No.
When nobody's looking.
Yes, when nobody's looking. He did not hold any grudges and ate all this very gladly. Srila Prabhupada comments. Bharat Maharaj was determined to finish his business in this material world, and he did not at all care for the world of duality. He was complete in Krishna consciousness and was oblivious to good and evil, happiness and distress, as stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila 4.176. In the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental speculations. Therefore, saying this is good and this is bad is all a mistake. Right? Because we're saying this is good, this is bad. Now we may, so that's the mental speculation. We complain, no, but there is good, there is bad, but how do we define what's good and what's bad? Yes?
He was the embodiment of Trinadapi's nature.
Yes, you could say that that's there. He was dealing nicely with everybody else. But he wasn't expecting any respect. Yes. So he was tolerant, he was humble, yes, you could say that. And he was always chanting, so that's the point. He was like this, he could always chant. Like that. So.
How do we define what is good and bad?
Yes, how do we define what's good and bad? What comes out
the
of
mind.
The head.
The mind.
Okay. Just watch out you don't blow a hole there.
Yeah. Exactly.
So the thing is Shastra says what's good and bad. So we just follow that. We can't do something else and claim this is good, this is bad. That's why then when someone brings up the point, no, but we have to get to reality, or you have to do what's proper, then define what's proper, because that's the whole point. You must define. Right? We saw before, as here's Prabhupada is making the point. There is the pratigya. He makes his point. Then he defines it.
Yes.
Right? In the body of a Brahmin, Jarabhara was completely absorbed in devotional service within. Therefore, it was not at all necessary for him to execute the regular principles of fruitive activity. Yes. That's the point. Right? Then he defines, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, one has to satisfy Hari. That is perfection of regulative principles. Yes. Right? And if you don't do that, then it's a waste of time. So therefore, he's given his reason. Right? And we see it's based on Shastra. So if someone says so many things, because people can say whatever, but the point is that there has to be the element of Shastra. It has to go back to Shastra and the Acharyas, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Otherwise, then, like Prabhupada said, it's just mental speculation. That's all. Then it's wrong. Even if everybody says it's right, it's wrong. So that's the difficulty. Is that nowadays, without quoting, you know, the devotional authority, then someone can be an authority.
Yes.
But previously that wasn't the case. That's the point. Is it has to be according to Shastra. Then you can discuss if that's the point that applies, or another point of Shastra, or how you're applying that point of Shastra. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Then those are for discussion. So it's not that discussion goes away. Free will, free thinking. The idea is, oh, if we follow Shastra, then there's no thinking. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that. But, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a matter of authority rather than just the senses.
Okay.
One has to understand in the material world of duality, to think that this is good or that this is bad is simply a mental concoction. However, one should not imitate this consciousness. One should actually be situated on the spiritual platform of neutrality. Right? So therefore, you're not there. It's not that you just copy this and not be on that spiritual platform. Otherwise, then you will be categorized as the madman. Right? If you're on the spiritual platform of neutrality, then you could function that way as a Brahma. But otherwise, you'll be a madman. Right? And we don't mean that you're making lots of money on Wall Street. We just mean you're crazy. Right? Yeah? Yeah. Okay. Verse 12 to 20. Dacoits kidnapped Jarabhara in an attempt to please Goddess Kali. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, at this time, being desirous of attaining a son, a leader of dacoits who came from a Shudra family wanted to worship the goddess Bhadrakali by offering her in sacrifice a dull man who is considered no better than an animal. Right? So you get a proper animal, then that's going to be, you know, you have to make a little effort, but it's quite easy. But to get a man who is as dull like an animal, then that would be even more of a difficulty, right? So he's, because he wants a son, he's willing to go to that extra effort. The leader of the dacoits captured a man animal for sacrifice, but he escaped, and the leader ordered his followers to find him. They ran in different directions but could not find him. Wandering here and there in the middle of the night, covered by dense darkness, they came to a paddy field where they saw the exalted son of the Angira family, Jarabhara, was sitting in an elevated place guarding the fields against the attacks of deer and wild pigs. Because right? What they do is you take the bamboo and you make a platform out of bamboo, split bamboo, and then generally there's a little roof over it,
yeah,
like that, and so that's always out in the fields, that's where you sit. Yeah. So it's quite good. The roof is way bigger than the platform. It comes right down past it on the sides, and the ends are way longer. So actually, even in rains and a storm, you can sit inside.
Yeah.
So it's a really good thing. So, but you can fully sit there and watch everything, and you know. So it's a very simple but a very effective. So they came along, would have found him like that. Yes. The followers and servants of the dacoit chief considered Jarabart to possess qualities quite suitable for a man-animal, and they decided that he was a perfect choice for sacrifice. Their faces bright with happiness, they bound him with ropes and brought him to the temple of goddess Kali. 12 to 14. Srila Prabhupada comments. In the body of a brahmana, Bharat Maharaj appeared deaf and dumb, yet he was the most intelligent man in the world. Nonetheless, being completely surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he remained in that condition and did not protest being brought before the deity for slaughter. Right, so it's like whatever Krishna arranges, he's surrendered. If Krishna wants this, then it'll happen. Because the point is nothing can happen without the Lord's sanction. So if it happened, means the Lord allowed it. So then he's cool. Right? Not that the things you like, you're surrendered to that. You know, like I remember, you know. Somebody's health wasn't good, and so then they were making the point that, you know, they've come to Vrindavan in case things, you know, doesn't look good, and just in case and all that, you know, and so they had that kind of mood like that, and it's very sober. He says, you know, but, you know, praying to Krishna, but, you know, also if Krishna wants, you know, because he's the supreme control, if he wants to make us healthy, we can go out, do more preaching, go this and that, and so many things like this. So he's mentioning these points, you know, sound very valid. And then when I was walking away, then the Swami I was with, then he turned to me after we were out of the ashram. He says, he's not ready to die. He still thinks he won't die. Uh-huh. Right? Because this devotee always deals with senior devotees who have come to Vrindavan to leave their body. Mm-hmm. And so he was saying he doesn't understand yet. Mm. But, so, you know, so there's always that, you know, you're hoping, oh yeah, maybe. So surrender means it's just what comes as it is. So if this is there, that's what you focus on. Now if suddenly in that somehow or another some treatment or just whatever happens, it changes, then okay, then it's just up to Krishna, whatever you want. Does that make sense? That's the idea. So you accept both sides, right? So you perform your duties, so you remove obstacles in the performance of your duties and your sadhana, but what actually happens with your situations and stuff like that, that you don't worry about as much, right? If it's not your duty, you don't worry about it.
So is there a distinction here between Bhajan Anandi and Ghosti Anandi? That Ghosti Anandi would...
He's not worrying about it for himself, it is for preaching.
Yeah. So.
But then you'd see that all the time. You know? Then you would see symptoms like that. Yeah. So when he's in this situation, then he'd be in that way. And when he's out, then he'd be the other, like we sing with Prabhupada. As we have learned from the previous verses, he was very strong and could have easily avoided being bound with ropes. But he did not do anything. He simply depended on the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his protection. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes surrender unto the Supreme Lord in this way. My Lord, I am now surrendered unto you. I am your eternal servant. And if you like, you can kill me, or if you like, you can protect me. In any case, I am fully surrendered unto you. No matter what happens. If things are good, I'm surrendered. If things aren't good, I'm surrendered. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that? Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. After this, all the thieves, according to their imaginative ritual for killing animalistic men, bathed Jarabharat, dressed him in new clothes, decorated him with ornaments befitting an animal, smeared his body with scented oils, and decorated him with tilak, sandalwood pulp, and garlands. Right. So they're making all this up. Yeah. Right? That's the whole thing. Because it's shudras, so they just make it up. You know, seems good.
Yeah, it looks like nice. That, you know.
They fed him sumptuously and then brought him before the goddess Kali, offering her incense, lamps, garlands, parched grain, newly grown twigs, sprouts, fruits, and flowers. In this way they worshipped the deity before killing the man-animal. And they vibrated songs and prayers and played drums and bugles. Jarabharat was then made to sit down before the deity. Srila Prabhupada comments. In this verse, the word Svavidhina, according to their own ritualistic principles, is very significant. According to the Vedic Shastras, everything must be done according to regulative principles. But here it is stated that the thieves and rogues devised their own process for killing an animalistic man. The Tamastic Shastras give instructions for the sacrifice of an animal like a goat or buffalo before the goddess Kali, but there is no mention of killing a man, however dull he may be. Right? So that's made up. It's just that it sounds good to them. Those in ignorance, then they may try this. This process was manufactured by the dacoits themselves. Therefore, the word svavidhina is used. Even at this time, there are many sacrifices being conducted without reference to the Vedic scriptures. For instance, in Calcutta, recently, a slaughterhouse was being advertised as the temple of the goddess Kali. Meat eaters foolishly purchased meat from such shops, thinking it different from ordinary meat and taking it to be the prasad of goddess Kali. The sacrifice of a goat or a similar animal before the goddess Kali is mentioned in the Shastras just to keep people from eating slaughterhouse meat and becoming responsible for the killing of animals. Right? So, in other words, if you have to kill it yourself in a whole ritual, it will be, you have to plan it more. It has to be there because you have to follow all the rules. So then you worship Kali, all the different worship has to be done. You have to be bathed, all the clothes, the proper goats with the proper lakshanas are there, the proper time, right? Yeah. So it has to be, I think it's at midnight on the dark moon night. So that basically gives you 2 nights in a month you could possibly do that. Yes. Mm-hmm. You understand? So you're regulating it and cutting it down. Because otherwise, if you don't slaughterhouse, then you could be eating meat 3 times a day, 7 days a week.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? So it's for regulating and cutting it down. Yes. Plus, if you go to the slaughterhouse, you don't think I've killed the animal. Yes. In fact, many times I remember they were telling me in Los Angeles that they'd be discussing with, sometimes people would come to the temple or at schools and that about vegetarian aspect. And the people were totally oblivious that actually meat, they connected it with an animal that was alive that was killed. Because it comes so nicely packaged and the little things, the saran thing, and all, everything's very nicely done. And so then they couldn't relate. When it was explained to them what actually the process was, they just became vegetarian on their own.
These were children or adults?
These were like college students.
All right, Christian.
But we're talking West Coast here, right? it means these guys could have got out and caught themselves a few people here, like that. Just go down to the beach and then when you see the guy writing on the board, that's our man.
Right? But, looks tender. Looks tender.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so they have to be responsible, because then you're clear. Because before you kill the animal, you have to chant the mantra, Mung Saha. Yes. I kill you, you kill me. Yes. So after a while, then you might think, what does this mean? Like that. But if you just go and, order your burger or something, you don't think about these things.
No.
Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the...
Mark,
yes.
There's many studies that have been done to prove that they're removing the empathy from the situation, so yes. They're not making that connection.
Yes, that's the whole idea. Yeah. The more nicely it's packaged, the more nice the environment, then you just think it's just a nice thing.
Yeah.
Because like in India, it's like, the animal's hanging there and there's live animals sitting out front chewing on, people leaves. Yeah. And so then it's got a little bit obvious what's happening here. Like that. But there it's just, I don't know.
I saw one bacon pack with a pig eating bacon.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't find that. Well, it's a standard thing, at least in America. Mm-hmm. Not the chain burger joints, but the family burger joints, or a steak restaurant. And generally there's a bull there, with the ring in his nose and the chef hat, and he's got the things for cooking and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or if it's, it's kind of, or chicken things, it's always a chicken that's advertising. Yeah. Chickens are cool with, becoming, they like, Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
That's how the whole thing started, like that. So it's all that, like you say, to Kind of, yeah, remove the empathy. Other parts of the world, you have less of that, but somehow or another, over there, then it's pretty standard.
Suavity.
Huh?
Their own
rules. Yes.
For many, many years.
Yeah, yeah. And those who deal in the slaughter industry, then that's one of the things, they don't name the animals. You know, they specifically don't name the animals, because if the animal has a name, you have to, you know, kind of relate.
Yes.
One guy told me he used to work in one of these slaughterhouses. He told me that everyone who works there knows that the guy actually killing the animals, he's crazy. He may get the job as a sane person, but after a couple of months, he's crazy.
He's crazy.
Nobody talks to him.
Exactly.
Because that's what he does all day.
Yeah, that's pretty. Okay, then where were we? Oh, we were down here with Prabhupada. Yes. The sacrifice of a goat or a similar animal before the goddess Kali is mentioned in the shastras just to keep people from eating slaughterhouse meat and becoming responsible for the killing of animals. The conditioned soul has a natural tendency towards sex and meat eating. Consequently, the shastras grant them such concessions. Actually, the shastras aim at putting an end to these abominable activities, but they impart some regulative principles so that gradually meat eaters and sex hunters will be rectified. Right, so by regulating, then that's how things. Because if you regulate something, it doesn't have as much interest.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes. The mind is less involved.
Yeah. So that's the idea. So both of these go together. Because the meat eating then creates so much passion that there's an interest in sex. Right. So they basically kind of go together. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. At this time, one of the thieves, acting as the chief priest, was ready to offer the blood of Jarabharat, whom they imagined to be an animal man, to the goddess Kali, to drink as a liquor. He therefore took up a very fearsome sword, which was very sharp, and, consecrating it by the mantra of Bhadra Kali, raised it to kill Jarabharat. Seems to be tying this up. Okay. Just as it gets exciting.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaurapanda ki.
I have a question. It's not mentioned that devotees do not have to necessarily follow the regulatory duties, but it is for the karmakandis.
Yeah, that are mentioned for them, like you don't need to do an ashwamedha yet.
Yeah. What about samskaras? Where would they
fit? Samskaras are part of the normal stuff that you do.
That is, even a devotee has got to...
Yeah, that's just regular stuff, that's standard stuff, because that's for the benefit of the child and all that. So in other words, everything that Prabhupada recommends, like following varnashram, samskars, you know, weddings, all these different things, this we follow. See, we don't even know what karmakanda stuff is. So we just take any rule that wasn't a rule when I grew up, then we want to throw it out.
Okay.
You understand?
Okay.
Yeah. You know, just like, are you doing Chandrayana fasting and all these different things, the worship of the Pitris and all the kind of stuff. So that's all the karmakanda stuff. So we are already given a lifestyle that doesn't include it. So we're given the lifestyle that we should be leading.
So where would the Shraddha ceremony, my departed father, where would that be classified?
That's part of the Antyeshti.
So
it's part of that.
So we need to do that?
It's done, but how we do it. You don't need to do it, you know, as necessarily, depending upon what you're doing. Is it, if it's connected, do you have other family members that are worried about something or not? If not, you just have some kirtan and some discussions, feed the Vaishnavas, and then feed your father, and then you're done. You know, you only have to do that once.
Okay.
You know, but if you have family who's worrying about it, then you can... You know, and do something more, but it's it's all, you know, worship of Vishnu. But the main thing is karmakanda means you want a fruit of result from your karma.
Oh, that's not
yeah. It's not ritual itself, it's what you want from the ritual.
Okay, that makes a difference.
No, that's the main difference.
No, I understand.
Right? But for those who are committed to karmakanda, they have extra stuff that they can therefore absorb themselves in.
Okay. Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you.
Okay.